Welcome to Getting Through It, where we're here to help you get through it. I'm John Bueri, and as always, I'm joined with hazard scientist Dr. Lucy Jones. So let's get to it. Today, we're talking about how a catastrophic natural hazard, like an earthquake or a hurricane, could strike during a pandemic. It's about how we think about what might happen based on what has happened in the past. Now, Lucy, you call it magical thinking, but there's more to it than that. I keep seeing on social media posts things about it's being on brand for 2020, that this is what's going to happen. It's not surprising that there's another disaster. But that's the human reaction to things, right?
Right. I mean, we as human beings want to make patterns, especially when we're facing something dangerous. That's how we evolved to be safe in a dangerous world by using our brains. So we immediately go and apply it. And sometimes we get patterns that really exist and sometimes we don't. One of the patterns we like to make is that there's some reason behind this. So the fact that we have been hit so hard this year by COVID-19, it must mean that this is a bad year and somehow we're going to be continuing to get worse. Let's think about how to actually talk about the chances of something bad happening. Now, if we're sitting in 2019 and I say, what's the chance that we'll have a big earthquake in a pandemic? Oh, come on. You don't have to do that, do you? And in fact, we would treat those as independent probabilities. So let's imagine that the chance in any one year of having a really bad earthquake is 1%. Pick one region. Right? And the chance of having a bad pandemic is about 1 every 100 years or 1% per year. Then the chance that you'd have both together, you multiply those two probabilities. So instead of 1 in 100, it's now 1 in 100 times 100, or 1 in 10,000 is your chance of having them together. And you think, okay, that's so low down on the list, I'm not going to think about it. This year, though, this is one of the things about probabilities. You have to talk about conditional probabilities. Given that the pandemic is already in place, now what's the chance of having them together? Well, the chance of the pandemic is 1. It's already here. The chance of an earthquake in the next year is still 1%. So now our chance of having them together is 1%. It didn't make the earthquake less likely. It didn't make it more likely, but it didn't make it less likely. And the chance of having them together is now much more likely because the pandemic's ongoing. And the reason this is important is that dealing with an earthquake in a pandemic would be really different than the earthquake on its own or any other natural disaster. I mean, imagine having a hurricane and needing to evacuate, and now you've got to go to shelters where probably people have COVID.
You're saying that our rate, now that we have the pandemic, the rate of the earthquake doesn't change. We still have the same chance of the San Andreas, for instance, here in Southern California. It's, 1% or once every 100 years, 150 right. years, it'll go.
Right.
So what changes then? How will the societal changes of the pandemic impact the outcome of the earthquake? Because we know that it won't change the way the earth moves or the energy released. But our human systems, right, the way we live our lives, that has changed during this pandemic. I remember when we created the shakeup back in 2007, 2008, it looked at impacts based on assumptions of the way we lived our lives, where people were driving into work. A lot of people were working in concentrated places like a downtown of a city, of downtown Los Angeles or in places like Irvine, and et cetera. This earthquake we assumed was going to be mid-morning, mid-week when people are at work. That doesn't play out. So if people are planning for the shakeout scenario, the assumptions in that scenario have changed. So is it better to have the earthquake? I guess the whole thing to say is it better to have the earthquake now when we don't really know what's going to happen, or is it better to have it when we know what was going to happen because we could actually model it because we knew what was going on?
Well, even then when we modeled it, we had to assume it was during the day or at night. And that's the interesting thing. You end up with really different fatality estimates because in general, our homes are safer than our commercial buildings. Also, being on the freeway, you're more likely to end up with deaths, the disruption of people on the freeway. So we ended up with a situation where, the casualties are very, very different between night and day. That's probably not true right now. We have a lot less people on the freeway. We have a lot less people in commercial buildings. And it would be more like having a nighttime earthquake with the lower casualties. It's not better or worse. It's different, right? Let's just sort of play a little thought game here and again, take an earthquake, but it really applies to just about any disaster. We now have more people at home, less people in offices. The good news is you're more likely to know where your family is. I mean, one of the things that always terrified me about earthquakes was having one happen during the day when the kids are at school, and how do I find them and how do I know that they're going to be okay? There's, you know, having your kids at home and not going off to school makes life pretty difficult for everybody in the pandemic, but it removes that worry as you look at it. I think for businesses, you're having your people work at home. Well, how does that get affected? Because you can't do backup power for everybody. One of the most likely things in a big disaster is to lose power, which means you're going to lose your internet connections. And most people's internet connections do depend on having something that's plugged in that they probably don't have backed up.
And cell phones too, right? Cell phone towers you need to have.
Right. Your cell tower's going to work. You know, the cell towers have backup power for 4 hours. You lose power for 3 days. After the first 4 or 8 hours, you have no cellular communication, period. You probably don't have internet connection. Even compared to 12 years ago when we did the shakeout, our world is an awful lot more dependent on that connectivity than it used to be. It's a different picture. Some good, some bad, with the added complication that an earthquake would probably increase the rate of COVID infections because we'd be forced into working with each other. You're not going to leave somebody buried in a building just because they might have COVID.
So, and that's interesting about the earthquake, and that's what we spend a lot of time on, but I'd love to get your take on hurricanes. You know, hurricane season will be coming. This pandemic will probably still be here when the hurricanes start hitting. And if you think about other atmospheric hazards that affect us, how does that play out in a pandemic?
Well, I think everybody who's doing planning about disasters should be stepping back and going, okay, how does this change what my plans have been? When you think about a hurricane, shelters become a much, much more problematic issue. And I think that you have evacuations out of an area, if it's a hotspot, you're now taking those infections to other locations. That's going to affect how people respond to it. If you have extra injuries, you've already got overloaded hospitals. What do you do with a hospital full of COVID patients as the hurricane's coming at the hospital? I think people really need to be thinking about how these things interplay with each other. And, you know, another sort of hidden disaster that's actually one of the deadliest ones in the United States is excess heat. When you get into get a big heat wave and you're killing a lot of people, people often end up in hospitals with heat exhaustion, and now you've got your overfull hospitals already. Excess heat drives you indoors to keep with the air conditioning, and COVID transmits much more easily indoors than out. I think it's quite notable that some of the real hotspots are places that are hot, where summer heat is keeping you inside. So, you know, we could go through all the details, but I think anyone who does planning for a future disaster needs to now recognize that pandemic is here for the year and changes how you should be responding to these different disasters.
I know that you're not an emergency planner, but you are aware of disasters, and you've made so many of us more aware of disasters. What are you doing personally around what might happen? You know, you live in Southern California, just like I do. We know that the earthquake is our biggest risk, most likely natural hazard to affect us this year. Right. What are you doing about your planning personally?
Well, you know, personally, my life hasn't changed much. I was working at home. My kids are grown. I don't have that responsibility. Probably the biggest one this has affected me on is thinking about food supply issues. Because when things really shut down and we were having trouble with distribution at the beginning of this process, it was a reality check for me. I can stand up and talk in a seminar that you need to think about supply chains. Actually thinking about it myself took some time. And one of the things, because of what happened, is I've actually moved to some more frozen food than I'd had in the past. Just who knows, you know, when the meat supply was going to break up, whatever. But now that's actually an extra vulnerability in an earthquake. I now have more food to defrost, to involuntarily defrost if we, you know, lose power for a week or two in an earthquake. So it just made me rethink how I keep supplies in the house in a way that I think has been pretty helpful for me.
And I know that you're not doing a lot of interviews in person either.
Oh, yeah. All right. So just the straight pandemic issue. If I don't do interviews. We actually at Caltech said we will not open the media center if there's an earthquake. We will arrange Zoom approaches to doing this. That's assuming, of course, that we can connect electronically when the earthquake happens. The biggest one might put that one up. Luckily, you know, when I started in the field, an earthquake response involved a lot more field work. The geologists still run to the field, but seismologists pretty much depend upon the existing network and all of our computer connections. Of course, running to the field isn't as dangerous. You're staying outside and you're probably keeping your distance if you're a geologist.
So really, what we've learned here in the last few minutes we've been talking is the idea that the rate of the earthquake, the rate of the hurricane, the rate of the tornado, all these other geologic and atmospheric disasters that might be created by the natural hazard doesn't change. And it's not more likely this year than last year to have the earthquake. It's not more likely next year than this year to have the hurricane. It remains constant based on our standard rates of these natural hazards occurring. But what to do about it means that we have to think differently about our role in these things. Lucy, what are you telling people who are trying to get through this? I mean, let's think about two different groups of people. What are organizations that are sort of managing their people? What do you tell them? And what if you're a family?
I would advise organizations, corporate or whatever sort of organization that has an earthquake plan or another type of disaster plan, especially those who face a hurricane season. It's on us now, pretty likely in the next month. Somewhere in the United States is facing it. Your plan was made without COVID in mind. What do you need to do to change it? Because the next the hurricanes this year will be in the middle of the pandemic, period. And you should really have done a better job of planning for it. On an individual level, so much of our lives have changed in terms of where we work and where our family is. In some ways, it might very much be easier. You know where your children are because they're home with you instead of off at camp or off at school. But then, what are your supply needs? Are you okay with the supplies you have, given that you aren't, you know, your kid isn't off at school, you aren't going to be going off to work? And you know, one thing I might add here is, like, what are you going to do after a disaster hits? One of the issues we've seen after big disasters is it causes a lot of damage. People need to run to their offices to see what's damaged, to fix the labs or whatever it is that they're dealing with. And they leave the children behind because they've got to go deal this thing with work. And the kids get sort of, you know, shoved off on someone else. And it's actually a pretty significant psychological issue for children because they're already feeling out of control. That's what their life is. They've got to depend on adults. And then the adult disappears. It causes some real psychological issues for children. You probably aren't running into your office when the earthquake happens now because there's nothing that you've got over there anyway. And here's your chance to do what's better for your children and really think about how you're helping them when something like this happens. And if you've thought it through now, it may also help you think about how you're going to do it in the future when the earthquake happens without a pandemic.
So we could go on, but we're going to cut it right here. Until next time, I'm John Bueri with Dr. Jones and you, Getting Through It. Getting Through It is a production of the Dr. Lucy Jones Center for Science and Society. Visit us online to get past shows and become a supporter at patreon.com. That's patreon.com and search Dr. Lucy Jones. There you can get extras, insights, and access to the world of Getting Through It. Our music is performed by Josh Lee, and this closing music is written by our own Dr. Lucy Jones.